This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, America. It is Friday, June 17, in the year of our Lord, 2016, and this is Washington Watch. I am Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for Tony Perkins. I'm not normally your host here, but normally pick it up for you on Fridays. I am senior counsel and director of strategic affairs at First Liberty Institute, the largest law firm in the United States, exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans. Check out what we're doing fighting for your family and your rights at firstliberty.org. Also legal editor for Breitbart News Network. So you want to hear the news that the mainstream media is refusing to tell you and see what's really going on in your neighborhood, your country, and your world. Check us out at Breitbart.com. But when I'm sitting at this microphone, I don't speak for First Liberty or for Breitbart News, nor do I speak for that matter for AFR, which does not take a position on presidential candidates, political endorsements, or any campaigns for federal office. Instead, I am here as a husband, as a father, as a Christian, and as a citizen of the greatest nation ever on God's green earth, in which we are all blessed to live, the United States of America. We've got a fantastic show lined up for us today, a show that where we will be responding to the terrible terrorist attacks in Orlando, Florida, over this past weekend. Not the raw facts of that terrible attack itself, but instead unwinding the spin and the liberal agenda that is being pushed on those events, refusing to face the reality of what happened last weekend and instead using it as a launching point for all sorts of liberal priority items, but ones that that are not going to keep my family safe, are not going to keep your family safe, are not going to ensure a peaceful and prosperous future for 300 plus million Americans. And we need to understand what's really going on if we're going to respond to it. I want to hear what you have to say as we sound off with our guest today. You can tell us what you're thinking at 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. As we tackle these issues today, we're going to be exploring three main themes. We're going to be looking at how it is that we confront Islamic terrorism. Second, we're going to talk about how the left, led by President Barack Obama, is pushing, is using this this terrible terrorist attack as an excuse to push for gun control. And third, we are going to talk about issues of religious liberty and how some are trying to conflate the terrorist Muslim extremist who carried out this attack and drawing some sort of moral equivalency to Bible-believing Christians who are simply trying to adhere to biblical views on marriage and sexuality and trying to be able to raise their children and live their lives and run their business consistent with that faith. It seems so outrageous that anyone would think that you could make such comparisons. But there are those on the left-wing side of the normally left-wing media who are making exactly these comparisons right now. So we're going to talk about the threat to religious liberty that's arising from people saying, "Well, what we really need to do is deal with this Christian culture that's not embracing marriage equality and transgenderism." But we want to hear what you have to say about this. So again, light up the phones at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I'd like to throw down as an initial point that we need to fight the enemy of radical Islamic terrorism. We're not talking here, of course, about all Muslims. Many Muslims, and I would like to hope most Muslims, are wonderful and peaceful and decent and honorable people, and many Muslims in this country are wonderfully patriotic citizens. But we need to face the reality that there is a minority percentage in the global Islamic community. Again, we're talking about a minority, not a majority, but they who adhere to a radical, violent ideology. Now, the false comparisons that's made there is, well, you can find religious extremists in any faith tradition. First of all, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I can't recall hearing about, Quaker terrorists. Quakers are pacifists. I haven't heard about any, mass shootings being carried out by Quakers who think they're on some divine mission for it. I can't remember the last time I heard about, radical Zoroastrians blowing up a cafe or something of that nature. So certainly there are those in several, in more than one faith tradition that does it. But we have to face the reality that if we're talking about the global Islamic community, we're not talking about one in a billion here or one in a million. There is a sizable minority. I've heard some people say 10%. I've heard some people say 15%. I'm not an expert, so I don't know. But there's 1.2 billion Muslims in the world. Let's say it's 10%. That's 120 million people who believe it's okay to use acts of violence against innocent people. Let's even say it's only 1%. Well, you're still talking about 12 million people. We cannot effectively fight and defeat an enemy if we refuse to acknowledge its existence. And when you take an Islamic terrorist and make him sound like he must have been crazy, he must have been mentally disturbed, try and write it off, say, oh, this wasn't rational thinking. Anyone who would do such a terrible thing must be mentally sick somehow. Well, then you're making it sound like it's just a one in a million incident, some kind of fluke. And as long as we're thinking that these are flukes, we're not going to effectively address it, as we will when we understand that it is an organized, religiously grounded ideology that has a significant number of followers that ranks in the millions, and that's something that as a country and as a civilization we need to face with as we fight radical Islamic terrorism. Weighing in on that topic, we've got Bill from Indiana. Bill from Indiana, you're on Washington Watch.
Good afternoon. Appreciate you taking my call.
Absolutely, Bill.
One of my questions is, the terms of radical Muslim, moderate Muslim, don't they all read from the same Quran? Whereas you'd probably say a moderate Muslim would actually be waiting for what the Quran says, the outcome and the end of life. And the radical is simply making it happen and bringing the jihad. But they all read out of the same Quran.
Bill, you raise an interesting point in what many Christians in America are unaware of, and I'd encourage everyone, if you want to check this out, go read some of the Quran. It's a much shorter book than the Bible, much, much shorter. And it's not – you don't have like we have, especially in the New Testament, either in Scripture, we have four types, biblical Scripture. We have four types of literature. We have historical narrative. We have poetry. We have prophecy. And we have didactic literature, teaching literature, whether it's Jesus giving the Sermon on the Mount or whether it's the Apostle Paul writing any of his epistles, where it's just flat-out moral instruction. The Quran doesn't read like that. The Quran much more percentage-wise. I mean, there's a great deal of poetic verses in it, and verses that seem vague in their content. And so, in the Islamic tradition, teachers of the faith, like imams, have a great deal more latitude because they're taking a text that is not as clear, explicit, and transparent as parts of the Christian Bible are. And so the teachers there, by focusing on certain verses and assigning certain meanings to them, that they can be looking at the same book but have radically different views as to what those verses are teaching. And that's how you can have some imams teaching a very moderate system of belief, and then you can have other imams, again, scholars on both sides with formal training, with advanced degrees, who can nonetheless be looking at the same book and yet assigning a radically different meaning to it. That's a great question, Bill, and I appreciate it. I want to know if you guys agree or disagree. Let us know at 866-372-7234. We especially like debate on this program, so if you have a contrary view, we want to know what it is. I think part of the challenge that America has been facing in America is that when you have a head of state who refuses to use the words radical Islamic terrorism, when that's what we're faced with, we can't have a national dialogue to try and understand this. And there were those in previous administrations. There were Republican leaders who called this by name and dealt with it as it was. There seems some, however, even in the Republican Party, who seemed to be in a state of denial. And again, tried to write off these people as a small fringe aberration. But again, when you talk about people like that, when you use words like fringe or aberration, you give the impression there's just a handful of them somewhere. And when that's what you think it's going to be pretty easy to contain. Instead of saying no, when you're talking about a global religion of close to 1.3 billion people, we're talking millions here. The only debate is whether it's millions or tens of millions or over 100 million. But we are talking in the millions here, and that's a big number of people. And that's something that that as a nation we need to be facing with, especially as we're talking about issues of immigration and assimilation. In the case of this particular terrorist, Omar Mateen, he was born on U.S. soil. And he was born to those legally. So under any interpretation of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, he was born an American citizen. But his parents were immigrants from Afghanistan. Now, it's wonderful that we're a nation of immigrants. Immigrants properly assimilated make this nation stronger. But evidently, this terrorist's family had a history of saying some pretty hateful things against various groups, including homosexuals. And this is the environment in which he was raised. We don't know exactly what he was taught growing up. And you don't want to blame a father for the sins of the son. But the reality is we have an immigration system that is broken. I think everyone recognizes that. We usually think about that in terms of the Mexican border. But we need to be taking a much harder look in terms of the immigrants coming into this country to have a fuller way to evaluate them, to understand them, and to make sure that they are willing to embrace American values, to assimilate into American life, and to celebrate what makes America exceptional, what makes us the greatest nation in the history of the world. That's what I have to say about this. I want to know later in the show what you think at 866-372-7234. We'll be back with a special guest right after the break.
What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example. This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
So 10 years ago, Katrina hits the Gulf Coast, and my dad and I thought it'd be cool to go and help somebody and start sharing that passion, that vision that God laid on our hearts. And shortly thereafter, American Family Radio was telling the nation about what God was doing through 8 Days of Hope. And that trip that was meant to be 5, 6, 7, 8 people was 684 people in December of 2005. We rebuilt 84 homes, and we were just so excited about what God was doing. Since then, 1,700 homes have been built, rebuilt across the country. We have taken 17,000 volunteers. Hundreds and hundreds of lives changed forever because they've given their hearts to Jesus, either serving on a missions trip or because they were a homeowner that we were serving during 8 Days of Hope. And now a new ministry, Hope Reigns, has sprung out of this ministry called 8 Days of Hope. Go to our website, 8daysofhope.com.
And we're back. America, this is Ken Kukowski, guest hosting with Washington Watch. We're going to start off this segment taking your calls, talking to you about what your reaction is to the terrible terrorist attack in Orlando and the issues we are dealing with in terms of fighting radical Islamic terrorism. Whether the solution, like the left is saying, is that we just need gun control and also religious liberty for peaceful, observant people of faith in this country, Bible-believing Christians, but peaceful adherents of other faiths as well. We're going to start this segment talking to Susan from Arkansas. Susan from Arkansas, you're on Washington Watch. Susan is still we're having technical difficulty with Susan. I should throw out the number while we're waiting on that, 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. Welcome to Live Radio, America. It's sometimes when you're reaching over a country, the space of a continent with over 300 million people in it, we have these amazing tools of technology today to be able to bring us all together. But sometimes they don't work the way they're the way we expect them to. I think we've got Susan now. Susan from Arkansas. Susan, Hello? You're on Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege to be on the show with you. Always enjoy it.
Glad to have you. Thank
earlier,
you.
Yeah, you bet. And earlier you were talking about President Obama and all of the confusion that reigns when he has no plan to deal with ISIS. And I don't know how many people have had the disadvantage in life of having to deal with sociopathic personalities, but this is what you've got in President Obama. And you can see his agenda is to create confusion. His agenda is to open the doors wide, just like on the Trojan horse, you know. He lets the enemy in, and then they do their dirty work. And he's, you know, he can pretend he's playing a game of charades with us. He, to me, is real evident who he is and what he stands for.
Well, Susan, do you think that are you saying that President Obama just wants widespread immigration, or are you saying that you think that it's your personal belief that he's trying to bring dangerous people into this country?
It is my personal belief that he is one of the most dangerous people, and he's bringing all the others he can. He let all the most dangerous people out of Gitmo. He's doing everything he can under this smiling auspices of playing the Dumbo, you know, not knowing what he's doing. And he knows exactly what he's doing. He's enemy number one in this country, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Susan, I think I'm on a different page with you on that, but I'll tell you, I've heard how people have been able to come to conclusions like that, even though I don't share them, in terms of people frustrated about his lack of a plan for ISIS, and people so unable, like me, so unable to understand how a president could be so incompetent at recognizing an enemy and fighting it, that a number of people like yourself, I guess, wonder if there's even more to it. I'd like to turn now, before we get to some more of our callers, I want to call to turn to a very special guest, Congressman Trent Franks, who serves representing the people from the 8th Congressional District of Arizona here in the United States House of Representatives. I have to take a moment of personal privilege here to say that it's I used to live in Arizona, and in fact, one of the first political campaigns that I volunteered for was a private citizen, but a real upstanding activist for conservative causes, by the name of Trent Franks, a successful businessman in that area who ended formerly helped in the state government. And the day I saw him win the primary and then go on to win a congressional seat way back in 2002 now, one of the proudest votes that I ever cast, he has never let me down, and very grateful for it. Congressman Franks, it's wonderful to have you on Washington Watch.
Ken, it is wonderful to be with you, sir. I don't know how many years that we've known each other, but you just made an admission, or sort of a confession, I think should be the term, that you helped me at one time in a big way when I really needed it. And I hope that someday that the whole world says you did the right thing.
Well, thank you, Congressman. And I think there's plenty of people who have looked at the great work you're doing and would say that we are doing the right thing. And so grateful to have you. I'd love for your thoughts on an important issue that we've got, and that is that over the past several days, you've seen it especially on several media outlets, where there are those who are drawing moral equivalencies between people of faith, especially Bible-believing Christians, especially evangelicals and observant Roman Catholics, who simply believe biblical teaching in church teaching, traditional Christian belief, regarding sexuality, regarding marriage as between a man and a woman, and making comparisons between that and the murderous ideology that we've seen from radical Islamic extremists, like that of Omar Mateen carrying out his terrorist act in Orlando, Florida. And I would love to have your perspective and reaction to that.
Well, you know, over the years, the thing that's been the most heartbreaking to me in trying to debate with the left or try to ascertain what common ground there might be between us is that somehow they are willing to dismiss truth from the equation, that truth no longer has any place in debate, that it's just who can yell the loudest. And the one thing that I would call upon the left to realize is that their prime goal has been power, and they've been willing to implement arguments that are completely specious and almost downright evil to suggest that somehow the Christian notion of doing unto others as you'd have them do unto you is equivalent to murdering innocent people because they don't adhere to your theological perspective. But there is a difference between kill the infidel and love your enemy. Those are different philosophies. And to somehow think that it's all right because they're both religious in nature, to equate them or to conflate them is not only a terrible injustice to those who hold the Christian ethic, but it is setting humanity on an incredibly dark and dangerous road. If we somehow suggest that we can just jettison the Christian ideal of loving one another, or the Judeo-Christian perspective of doing unto others as you'd have them do unto you.
Congressman, we're coming up on a hard break. Would we be able to hold you over the break? I would love for you to be able to finish that thought and for us to unpack that for the American people.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, core CPI came out, and core CPI was 0.2%. That is what was expected. Core CPI is consumer price indexes without food and energy. I would submit to you there are some food products that certainly have gone up. We have seen things like beef, but dairy, chicken, and other things continue to rise. But nonetheless, 0.2% for core CPI, I suppose that makes the Federal Reserve feel a little bit better. They probably are really believing that they have got a handle on inflation, when in fact we can't seem to hit their 2% inflation rate, at least by my numbers, maybe by theirs, that has happened. The Philadelphia Fed manufacturing number would indicate that manufacturing in part of the Northeast Corridor is up dramatically. It went from a negative 1.8% to 4.7%. Really? When I see numbers like this, I draw a very quick conclusion that either the number of a negative 1.8% in May was not even close to being accurate, or June's number of 4.7 isn't accurate. Either way, the Fed continues to lose its ability to be able to accurately predict anything. And this is another example of just that. Folks, we continue to watch oil go lower as we are looking at potential oil gluts. Yet I expect that gasoline prices may continue to rise through the summer driving season, unfortunately.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
And we're back, America. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for Washington Watch. We're going to be taking your calls, getting back to all those calls in the final quarter hour of the show at 866-372-7234. Again, these are issues that impact every American, our faith, our freedom, and even our very lives. And we want to know how these things are impacting you, your thoughts, and your heart. So let us know at 866-372-7234. Before that, though, we have with us as a special guest Congressman Trent Franks, who we're going to continue our conversation with. And Congressman, too, as soon as we discuss religious liberty here, I'm also going to ask you about the Second Amendment in a bit, because it's been this huge push that you've seen for the left for gun control over this past week. Evidently, the Tsarnaev brothers in Boston, there were no guns there. They used pressure cookers, and I didn't see a push from President Obama to try and ban cookware after that attack. But for some reason, seems to think that if only we can take away the tools whereby law-abiding Americans defend themselves and their family, that somehow that will make radical Islamic terrorism go away. But before we get to that, you were telling us regarding religious liberty here in terms of how you contrast this murderous ideology of the jihadists with the religious liberty that decent and honorable Americans have in how they express themselves and live their daily lives here in the United States.
Well, I guess the main thing I mean to suggest is that there are differences in theology, and certainly there are differences in theology within the Christian persuasion, and differences in theology within Islam, and I understand that very, very well. And it's important that we test those ideals and ideas to see how they work in real life. And the kill the infidel ideal has not shown to be conducive to brotherhood among the human family, whereas the idea of loving each other and loving one another certainly has. And so it's important that we, without condemning everyone in every circumstance, to say what is their particular personal theology and philosophy, and if it's one that it means that it's all right to murder their fellow human beings, then I don't think that we're under any obligation to embrace it.
Now, so Congressman,
the notion that being different is not a bad thing. I mean, true tolerance is not pretending you have no differences. It's being kind and decent to each other in spite of those differences. And I think that's the measure of sincerity among most of the debate.
Now, Congressman Trent Franks, how do you think we should, that events like the terrorist attack of this past week, should that have any bearing on this country's immigration policy, both in general or more specifically as we look at the refugee crisis in the Middle East? And if so, how do you think we need to be adjusting that policy?
Well, of course I believe that we have every right to consider those tragedies when we consider who we want to come into this country. Coming into this country is a privilege. We're not obligated to let everyone in this country. It's a privilege to come into this country, and we have every right to say to them, well, what is your ideology? What is your perspective? Do you think that it's good to kill innocent human beings just to further your own theological perspective? And if they say yes, I mean, obviously, they're probably not going to be forthright about it, but to say that we don't have any right to try to ascertain what that is and to scrutinize that based on what's right and good for innocent Americans in this country is ludicrous. When you let somebody in your home, you may say, well, you can come into my home or you can't. You have the right to say who can come into your home. That doesn't mean that you don't care about everyone, but it does mean that you have the right and even the responsibility when you're trying to protect your family to say who comes in and out of this country. And certainly a person's beliefs and philosophy and that transcends some of the religious differences, but certainly their fundamental convictions about things like terrorism are fair game to decide whether you want somebody to come into this country or not.
Congressman Franks, that sounds like absolute common sense to me, and it just astounds me that there are any Americans anywhere on the political spectrum, including the far left, that would disagree with what I consider such a self-evident premise of looking to our national interests and our own security in terms of who we allow into this country. In the 2 minutes that we have left, we've heard from the president is what we need is gun control. In 90 seconds. Tell us your thoughts on that, I'm sure, including why you believe President Obama is wrong.
Well, I think it's despicable for the president to make that argument because, first of all, he's saying to people somehow that if we have gun control, that we won't be subject to things like what happened in Orlando, that terrorists will somehow be dissuaded from that. It was against the law for him to have that gun in Orlando, that nightclub. It was against the law for him to do it. So one more law would have not made the difference. But the biggest argument is this. The best way we could make ourselves more vulnerable to terrorism is to take the guns and the ability to defend themselves out of the hands of our citizens. I don't know of anything that would make us more vulnerable to terrorism. If you went, sat down and tried to figure out a way to make us more vulnerable, that would probably be the best way to do it.
It's like the NRA's Wayne LaPierre said, that sometimes the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, including the God-given right that all of us have codified in the Second Amendment, if we are a law-abiding and peaceable American citizen, to be able to keep and bear arms for our own personal defense and defense of our family.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Ken, and I really want you to know it's been a pleasure to be on the program with you.
Well, thank you, Congressman Franks. We appreciate so much your work. God bless, and we'll hope to speak with you again soon.
Did you know that the Arlington National Cemetery was originally built during the Civil War? That's right. It was the home of Robert E. Lee, actually, who was the general of the Confederacy. Little known fact about the Arlington National Cemetery, which today is an iconic tribute to our fallen heroes. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll visit the Arlington National Cemetery in September on our Spiritual Heritage Tour as well as going to many other sites in our nation's capital. We'll also go to the home of George Washington, Mount Vernon. In addition, Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown will be a place we visit just prior to our nation's capital. So if you'd like to go on either of these tours in September, or both, we welcome you to find out all the information at the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
A quick trip to Aunt Helen's unexpectedly became an extended stay, and you're without enough of your medication. It's good to know you have real-time access to a national network of board-certified doctors with just a phone call. MD Live is non-emergent medical care 24/7, fitting your schedule. No forms to fill out and no waiting room, because all you need is your non-narcotic medication. HCBenefits.com. That's HCBenefits.com.
Did you know there's an approved healthcare choice just for Christians that's founded on the timeless principles in God's Word? It's not insurance. It's MediShare. Over 189,000 believers across America who love God and share each other's healthcare bills. It's about half the cost of health insurance, and you never pay for medical practices that go against your Christian beliefs. Best of all, the healthcare law includes a special provision for MediShare members, so you don't have to buy insurance or face penalties. MediShare is affordable healthcare without compromise.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
And we're back for the final segment of the show, America. This is Ken Klukowski sitting in for Tony Perkins here at Washington Watch. I'm a senior counsel at First Liberty Institute, largest law firm in America, exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans. So check out the work we're doing for you there at firstliberty.org, and legal editor for Breitbart News Network. So if you want to hear the news that the liberal left is trying to keep from you, make sure you check us out at Breitbart.com. We are taking your calls for the rest of the hour at 866-372-7234. We are talking faith, family, and freedom, especially in reaction to the terrible Islamic terrorist attack in Orlando last weekend. So call in and sound off at 866-372-7234. We are turning now, she's been very patient as we were on with the congressman, to Becky in Alabama. Becky in Alabama, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi. I would just like to say I have been through a really hard time the last 6 years of my life. I had a stroke. And the Lord has brought me out of all of it. I mean, it's been a beautiful thing to see how he works. And I think that's where we're missing a lot of this. This is spiritual warfare. It's between Satan and Jesus. And Satan, he tried to kill Jesus in the Bible, and he's still trying to do that. He hated him. He's still hating him. And I think we need to get back to spiritual warfare and we win spiritual warfare just by believing what the Bible says. And, you know, everything that has been said to me about, you know, my being healed, I would never be healed, I would walk with a cane the rest of my life, I would never drive again, all of that, I'm not doing any of that. And it's all because I believed Jesus, and I just believed he was going to do it. I believed I would walk without a cane, I believed I would drive again. You know, and he is a great and wonderful God. He loves us more than we know, and he's here to defeat the enemy. He defeated him at Calvary, actually. He's been defeated.
Well, amen.
And we just have to have the faith to believe it.
Becky, amen, and thank you so much for your testimony. Appreciate you sharing that with us. Thank you. Turning now to Don from Illinois. Don from Illinois, you're on Washington Watch.
Well, yeah, I don't like Obama, never have. I think he's the enemy. I think he's been put in there by the Bilderbergers or the Illuminati or someone. I think we should watch to see how many billions he receives when he leaves office and who it comes from.
Well, I'll tell you, Don, I didn't vote for the guy. I think a lot of people would guess and would guess correctly that I voted against him both times, but he did win the election. I think it was on the wrong debate. I think it was on the wrong issues. I wish that the election had been about other issues, and at least in one of those instances, I mean, I don't know, maybe we should have had a different candidate. But the American people voted for the guy. I mean, it's he got elected to the presidency. He's turned out to every bit be as bad of a president as I feared he would. But it's you know, the reality about democracy is it includes the freedom to be able to vote for the wrong person. Thank you, Don. Turning now to Steve from Mississippi. Steve from Mississippi, you're on Washington Watch.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you so much for taking my call. This is a wonderful program. I'm listening to all these points of view, and I just want to say what an important topic this is, and thank you for letting me even say a couple of words here with y'all. Truthfully, you know, I'm recognizing, identifying with the woman that just spoke from Alabama a couple of minutes ago. We're in danger as Christians of being confused, in my opinion, and I think we're confused by the fact that there are psychologically questionable individuals that do have access to firearms that go in and do these mass murders, and then we have others who seem to think that it's according to their ideology or their religious or their political association with organizations like ISIS. They're two separate issues, in my opinion. The issue of who should have guns and how we should police that, and the issue of a radical Islamic terrorism are two separate issues. And I just want to put out that the author of confusion, we all know who that is. Therefore, as Christians, I think our biggest challenge is to recognize that we do, of course, have the right to defend ourselves. We do, of course, have ideologies regarding sexuality and regarding marriage. We do, of course, have points of view. And as the, I believe, senator was saying, you know, that we would decide that we could get along as opposed to deciding how we're going to exterminate each other is the basis of our Christian brotherhood. And I just want to close with one little point here. I was a dean of the Bronx High School for a few years. What that meant was that I was the guy that would see the troublemaker kids in those famous schools that you know about. They have metal detectors. Kids would come in with knives and weapons. And every day, my friends, every single day, I saw a youngster in handcuffs every day for over a year and a half. Now, that youngster was not a bad person at heart. That youngster was had his own reasons. But I do want to say this. He represented about 5 to 7% of the population of the school, and that 5 to 7% of the population of the school was disrupting the other 93 to 95% of our orderly life.
Well, Steve, we appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that. I'll react to one aspect of it. First of all, I do agree that gun rights and how we fight terror, that those are distinct issues. Obviously, they have – one does relate to the other, but you're right, that they are separate policy issues. Now, speaking as a constitutional lawyer, you know, the Second Amendment is a fundamental right guaranteed to all Americans who are adult citizens if they are law-abiding and peaceable to be able to keep and bear arms for self-defense and the defense of their family and defense of others. Now, the challenge becomes how we figure out who the law-abiding and peaceable people are. We've heard stuff talked about this week about, for example, the no-fly list and the terrorist watch list, whether we should say that those people can't have a gun. And before we turn to our next caller, and by all means, I want to hear people's thoughts on this at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. The issue here is due process. You know, no constitutional right is absolute. Your right to free speech does not mean that you can perjure yourself under oath in a courtroom. It does not mean that you can impersonate a police officer. It does not mean that you can commit acts of fraud or slander or defamation against people. All of those are speech. None of those are protected by the First Amendment. In the case of the Second Amendment, the relevant part here would be the Due Process Clause. The Constitution says you can be deprived of your liberty, but it says that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So when it comes to things like the terrorist watch list or the no-fly list, the reality is this. If there is someone that hasn't yet committed a crime, but we have reason to believe that they are seriously dangerous and the government is watching them as a potential terrorist and they tried to buy a gun, there's legislation being introduced in Congress right now by certain congressional Republicans that may be able to hold the constitutional line for the Second Amendment and due process. And that would be if someone on a terror watch list is trying to buy a gun, that the sale can be delayed for 72 hours, during which time the burden is on the government to take to court to show a judge what is the evidence the government has that this person may be engaged in terrorism. And if the government can make that showing to a federal judge appointed by the president with the confirmation of the U.S. Senate, then that sale can be blocked, and that person then can be investigated and even arrested for whatever involvement they are having with terrorism. But if the government cannot show any evidence as to why they are suspicious of this person, if they have nothing they can show that judge, then that person will not be stripped of their fundamental Second Amendment rights. So that's just my riff on that issue, because I think it's an important one. And let's go ahead and move on now to get reaction from Steve in Mississippi. Steve, you're on Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. I was calling a moment ago, so if you
want... Steve, you still with us? Okay, it looks like we've lost Steve. Steve, sorry we missed you there. Turning now to Brian from Arkansas. Brian from Arkansas, you're on Washington Watch.
Hey, man, thank you, sir, and thank you for the work that you guys do at your at the law firm.
Thanks for listening.
My question... You bet. About gun control, Second Amendment, First Amendment, our entire Constitution as a whole, you very rarely get a straight answer. And so that would be very nice today if we could. If our founding fathers, who we believe and we hear all the time, we feel like we're God-centered, God-honoring, and led by the Holy Spirit, to do and to write the Constitution, do you feel like today, if those men were around today, Patrick Henry and the rest, would have the same lethargic attitude that we, as you see as a whole, as most Americans, are basically fat and happy, if you'll excuse that expression, would they sit around on their laurels, or would they actually be taking to the streets? Thanks, I'll listen to you over the phone.
With regards to what? Terrorism or gun control or what?
I mean, you could lump it all in there together. You know, I mean, even the health care law was a tax. And, I mean, just the overreach that you see in
I got aspects. You, Brian. Absolutely. Brian, that's a great question. And the reality is, when we adopted the Constitution, it was written in 1787, ratified in 1789. It was ratified only on the condition by some of the ratifiers that there would immediately be a Bill of Rights added to it. That was written in 1789, and that was ratified in 1791. During that 4 to 5 year period, we got our Constitution and the first set of amendments in the Bill of Rights. This was the first written Constitution in the history of the world. That was one of the aspects of the American Revolution. For the first time, a people would govern themselves by voting to adopt a document that would specify the powers of government, the limits of government, the rights and freedoms of the people. And the founding fathers, Brian and everyone out there, the founding fathers believed that the democratic republic that they were creating could only endure if people were engaged as virtuous citizens. That limited government only endures when people govern themselves and when they are public-spirited and care about their country and care about their future and take it upon themselves both to run their own lives in a law-abiding and honorable fashion and also to learn the public issues and to hold their public leaders accountable and to vote out of office politicians who do not faithfully adhere to the Constitution and promote the general good in doing so, and to replace those with people who do. So I think that's a great question, and I think that's how they'd respond to that. We're turning now to Lance. Lance from, is it Nebraska or is it New Brunswick? Where are you joining us from, Lance?
Nebraska.
Okay, very good. Lance,
yeah, thanks for,
you're on Washington Watch. You bet.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate Tony, Washington Watch, and what you guys are doing. I was going to make a comment about Islam, and you had made some comments earlier about, you know, we hear a lot about...
Yeah, go right ahead.
We hear a lot about radical Islam, and of course, you know, Obama and the left tend to not say Islam at all. But I think, those organizations like Global Faith Institute, Jihad Watch, but I think, you know, just from sources I've read, I think it's important to distinguish between what Muslims believe and what the Quran teaches and Muhammad taught and what Muhammad, you know, his example in the Hadith. And you know, Muhammad engaged in a lot of violence. And he taught the Quran teaches to engage in violence towards non-Muslims, Jews, Christians. Of course, there's a lot of violence towards Christians around the world. But so I think if, even though there's, I think we have to distinguish between Muslims and, you know, again, Muhammad and the Quran, because the Quran does teach, and Muhammad taught and gave an example of being violent and ruthless and unethical in a lot of ways, you know, allowing the rape of women of conquered tribes to pillage different caravans, to engage in lots of violence to for those who did not submit to him as a prophet and to Allah as the one true God. So
we hear you, Lance, and we thank you for calling in to make your point. We're going to close out the show with Gerald from Mississippi. Gerald, you're on Washington Watch. We've got 60 seconds.
Mississippi, Gerald, you're on Washington Watch. Well, play 60 seconds. Thank you for taking my call.
Gerald, I'm hearing us in the background there. Can you turn down your radio for us and go right ahead? We've got 45 seconds.
Turn down your radio for us. Is that better?
Yeah, go right ahead, Gerald.
Yeah, I just want to thank all my fellow citizens out there who have taken an opportunity that you've given them to make comments on such a critical subject. And I'm sure our congressman who spoke on this, too, very level-headed. I just really feel that this country has had some extremely devastating gun issues at hand, you know, the deaths that have occurred throughout the last decade to armaments, people just going crazy, it seems. And there doesn't seem to be any true enforcement that comes out of government. There's been a lot of laws passed to control guns, blah, blah, blah.
Gerald, our show is on a hard break. We would love to pick up this conversation with you and talk about that fundamental right and how we need to face that as a country. Everyone, that's our show. Thanks for being with us.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.